Hey, podcast listeners. I'm your host, Barbara Morgan, and you're listening to Austin Film Festival's On Story podcast. This week on Story, it's all about women talking, and I'm not just referencing our powerhouse guests. Academy Award-winning producer Dee Dee Gardner and Oscar-nominated writer-director Sarah Polley, but also their newest film collaboration and adaptation, Women Talking. Women Talking is a drama feature based on Miriam Tave's critically acclaimed novel of the same name. Inspired by true events from a sequestered community in Bolivia, the film follows a group of women in an isolated religious colony as they struggle to reconcile their faith amidst a series of assaults committed by the colony's men. This raw and vulnerable look at domestic violence is ultimately a story of women's resilience, and it's beautifully portrayed by leading actors Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, Jessica Buckley, Judith Ivey, and Frances McDormand. Austin Film Festival is thrilled to include this powerful film in our 2022 film slate. But a little more on the women talking in this post-screenwriting Q&A. AFF was honored to award Dee Dee Gardner with the 2022 Polly Platt Award for Producing, an Austin Film Festival award intended to recognize producers with a keen sense of story who have demonstrated a commitment to fostering new talent. Throughout her career, Gardner has produced many Academy Award and Golden Globe-winning films, including pioneering works such as Minari, If Beale Street Could Talk, Moonlight, The Big Short, Vice, Selma, 12 Years a Slave, and Terrence Malick's Palme d'Or winner, The Tree of Life. Her recent television releases include HBO's limited series, The Third Day, as well as the Amazon series, The Underground Railroad and Outer Range. Joining Gardner is Women Talking's writer-director, Sarah Polley. Formerly an actress known originally for her leading role in the television series Ramona, Polley made her directorial debut with her film Away From Her, which was Oscar-nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. Polley also received the Writers Guild of America Award for Best Documentary Screenplay for her doc Stories We Tell. Most recently, she executive produced and wrote the Netflix limited series Alias Grace, which she adapted from Margaret Atwood's novel. In short, Sarah Polley is a master at taking existing stories and filtering them through a lens of her own. AFF moderator Marissa Patton spoke with Dee Dee Gardner and Sarah Polley after their screening at this year's Austin Film Festival to give our audience an insider's look at the art of adaptation and to host an honest conversation about tackling stories with difficult subjects. Shh, the women are talking. It's time to listen. Clips of Women Talking, courtesy of United Artists Releasing.
Well, first of all, let me just say thank you so much for making a film about this topic and doing it in a way that is, it really didn't hold anything back. It was very raw and very vulnerable and so important. One in six women experience rape a year or in their lifetime. One in three women will experience domestic violence. And it's particularly cathartic for me to be up here talking with you today. Because I'm one of those women. I was a young bride who experienced violence in my marriage. And whenever I would tell people the stories about that, the very first thing that they would always say without fail when I was done talking is, well, why didn't you just leave? And to be able to articulate the answer to that question was so difficult. And yet you've done it in a way that is so eloquent and beautiful and accurate through these characters. So can you walk us through? I mean, how did you do that? You perfectly encapsulated every emotion, every struggle, every thought, every back and forth that I had. And it's so spot on. So
thank you so much for sharing that, first of all. I mean, I think that there are so many different ways to respond to violence and to trauma, and all of them are valid and understandable. And I think we can do a lot of judging each other in terms of various responses. What I loved about Miriam Tave's book was that she allowed for this incredible range of responses and allowed for a space in which they all could be articulated in some way that honored each perspective. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Something that I found really interesting too in the struggle that the women were experiencing regarding whether or not to leave was there was also this struggle of whether or not to forgive. And, you know, I sort of have this idea that even if you leave a situation like that, if you hold on to it in a way that you're unable to forgive, in some ways, the abuser is still victorious because you're still kind of carrying that around with you. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think forgiveness has to be on the terms of the person who is harmed and in the on the timing of the person who is harmed. I don't think forgiveness can be impelled. I think for some people, it is a North Star and something that I think certainly for Ona, the idea of leaving is interesting in part because as well as stopping the harm, it's gaining the perspective to perhaps one day be able to understand it, perhaps one day to be able to forgive. And because forgiveness is such a big part of these women's faith, that's a very important goal for them. I don't think it has to be a goal for everybody. I think forgiveness sometimes also isn't linear. I think there can be moments where you're forgiving and other moments where you find yourself back in anger, and that's also okay for it not to be a straight path.
I want to stay and fight.
But won't we lose the fight to the men and be forced to forgive them anyway?
I want to stay and fight too.
No one's surprised that you do. All you do is fight. Is this really how we are to decide the fates of all the women in this colony? Just another vote where we put an X next to our position? I thought we were here to do more than that.
You mean talk more about forgiving the men and doing nothing?
Everything else is insane. But none of you will listen to reason.
Well, why are you here with us? Why are you still here with us if that is what you believe? Just leave with the rest of the do-nothing women.
She is my daughter, and I want her here with us.
Is forgiveness that's forced upon us true forgiveness?
Keep nonsense like that to yourself, please.
I think what's integral for forgiveness to happen is for harm to stop first. And I think, yeah. So the line, sometimes forgiveness can be confused with permission, came from, you know, somebody involved in this film who realized that after a long time in a relationship where there was domestic violence, that every time she was forgiving the violence, she was actually giving permission without realizing it for it to happen again. And because the harm was still ongoing, the forgiveness meant something very different than what she had intended.
Perhaps in time, she's introducing the notion that forgiveness is a practice. It's not a switch. It's a sort of a daily commitment, and you will vary your attention to it, and that's okay. That it's just it's a long practice.
There were several characters, Ona was one of them, that really stuck out to me as I was watching this. And I was particularly fascinated by Melvin's character, from transitioning from female to male and yet still remaining voiceless until the very end of the movie when he's finally addressed by his name. Can you kind of talk us through the decision, I suppose, to keep him quiet, even as a male?
Mm-hmm. So that's in the book, and I read it as a sort of statement of power that until he was addressed as who he was, he would not be participating in conversation until he could see that his community had moved to recognize and acknowledge him and who he was, that he would not be engaging as long as they weren't actually engaging with him.
Yeah, it seems like there was, you know, a few struggles of identity. I think one of the lines in there was, how do we know who or what will be if we leave on the other side of this with so much being unknown. And I thought that that was particularly beautiful that you highlighted that so well. I was also very interested in August's character. First of all, just having a man in the room, even if he's just taking the notes, was interesting. I'd love to hear your thoughts about his character.
Yeah, I mean, I was really interested in the idea of, you know, and it's in the book, but the idea that there is a man in the room, the only man whose face we really see or really hear speak, is a deeply good person.
It's good that you're here, August, to remind us of what's possible. Because it's easy to forget.
I'm so sorry, Ona.
One day I'd like to hear that from someone who should be saying it.
I think that in a way, the project of the film is, you know, what do we want the world to look like? You know, that thing that Ona says of, let's not just talk about what we want to destroy, but also what we want to build. And so to have this example there, to be reminded that more is possible, better is possible, a different way of right relations between genders is possible. He, for me, is a real symbol of hope and what could happen if the boys are taught differently, if they're, you know, asked to reimagine their roles in the colony.
Right, which is, I loved at the end with the gun, because even if, you know, if the women leave, if what they're leaving behind continues to breed that sort of thing, then leaving really ultimately doesn't solve anything. It just continues to infect and to spread. And again, something that you guys just captured just so succinctly and so beautifully. Also, just aside from him being just this beautiful person, thought that it was interesting that the characteristics that he displayed were some that society would often ascribe as being feminine versus being more masculine. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think his superpower is he listens.
Take notes, men.
He cries. I don't think that makes him feminine. He listens. I don't think that makes him feminine. I think he had a good mother. But it's why it's so essential. Even he's learning in that moment when Claire says, no, August, the point was for you to take the minutes. Like, be a witness. Like, your citizenry is reliant upon your ability to witness. I think that stuns him. And I think that goes, in my imagination, it goes into how he teaches those boys, that's another sort of handful of skills.
There was also this element of innocence, kind of contrasting the violence in the movie, particularly in the little girls, and also in one of them being the one to finally say decisively, we are leaving. And I believe it's a deviation from the book, correct me if I'm wrong, that it is a female narrator versus a male, and also a child. How did you go about making that decision and why?
That happened really late in the editing process, actually. So in the book, August is the narrator and we're reading his minutes of the meeting. And that worked beautifully in the book. And we sort of assumed it would work the same way in the film. But when you have the sort of intimacy of sound in your ear and the immediacy of an image, suddenly the fact that it wasn't a female voice, that it wasn't the voice of someone who had directly experienced this violence felt really dissonant for us. And so we had to kind of reimagine the film through the eyes of Oche and imagine how she would be describing it and how she would be perceiving it and how she would be talking about it to a child that had never known this world.
A new religion taken from the old, but focused on love, would be created by the women of the colony. Our children would be safe. Collectively.
That was a really interesting decision-making process because it was very collective. So there were these amazing moments in the making of this film where an idea would be born out of four or five people's idea in discussion. So it was Dee Dee's idea to change the narrator. And originally the idea was Ona speaking to her unborn child. And then Chris, our editor, was like, what if it's Oche? And then I was like, what if it's Oche talking to the unborn child? And so it was like one of those magical filmmaking moments that I think people don't talk about enough, where things are not the function of one brain, but of many. And certainly in the spirit of this film, those were the most thrilling moments, where when we as a group found something together.
Did you find that you had several of those moments throughout the filmmaking process?
Yeah, it was constant. It was like a really amazing kind of constant circle of people talking and feeding off of each other's ideas and coming through disagreements to a better place of understanding, and really the spirit of the book infused the entire process of the film.
Was there anything else that you chose to change from the book to the screenplay?
There are a lot of things. I mean, there are a lot of things that are not in the film that are in the book, like August's whole life before coming back to the colony, his relationship with his mother. I think the depiction of Melvin was a little bit different in the book, where Melvin had started dressing like a man because of the trauma in the book, and just being conscious of how many terrible depictions there have been of trans people in films. I wanted to make it very clear that Melvin was a man and had always felt like a man, and this wasn't because of the trauma, that was who he was. So there were, yeah, lots of things like that. But it was really important to us to capture the spirit of the book in the film and how it made us feel. So in that way, I think it's very true to the book.
And then you mentioned Melvin again. I was curious why he only talks to the children specifically. Is that because they recognized him more for who he was and their innocence, or was there something else behind that?
Yeah, they're not misgendering him and they're using his real name. So
plain and simple. I like it. I also felt as I was watching it that there was like just a lot of symbolism. There was, you know, again, coming from my experience, just watching it, and it felt like every couple of minutes, I was like, oh, that's really significant. That's really significant. That makes total sense to me. Was there a lot of, you know, collaboration or effort behind those little details to really kind of solidify the symbolism and in pursuit of, you know, leaving and forgiveness and identity through all of that?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of time to gestate. We had a lot of time to talk and think. You know, COVID made us wait a year past when we were going to make the film. And so a lot of time for us to put all of our, you know, brains and experience together. So it began with me and Didi and Fran talking nonstop. Then it became the cast talking nonstop. And then right through to the editing process, it was always groups of people sharing experience and community that, you know, and we would pull details from people's lives and from their lived experience into the film at every stage.
So it sounds like there's a lot of like personal heart that went into the movie as well. I feel like you can definitely feel that as you're watching it.
And now some questions from our live Austin Film Festival audience.
Thank you. I think it takes a lot of power to tell a story like this without the use of that sort of like trauma porn of violence that we are used to seeing on screen. So thank you. And I think because of that, I felt like pacing was so important. And I noticed that like in the scenes in the barn, there's so many, especially at the beginning, moments where the pacing almost feels like a courtroom drama. And I was curious how much of that, because obviously your editor understood pacing, but I was curious how much of that was editing and how much time was spent on rehearsal with your actors to kind of find that pacing, if that was something that was worked through.
Yeah, so I mean, I remember it being a directive at the very beginning of rehearsal, like this is going to go faster than anybody wants it to. It's going to, you know, we aren't going to be lingering in the kinds of pauses I usually love. We're going to go at a clip. And then, of course, like that works for the first day. And then everybody starts to slow down because everyone's so good. And so everyone wants to watch each other more. And so then there was a moment where we were about to go into one of the really long scenes. And we were like, let's just run the lines. And the idea was like, let's just run the lines as fast as we possibly can to just get the dialogue. And then we did that run through. And it was like, let's try actually for that, like the run through speed. And it still wasn't the pace we needed. Like, I mean, in the editing room, that it was just a process of tightening and tightening and tightening as much as we could without losing the texture of the pauses and also the importance of people listening. But this film, I knew, had to have a momentum. There had to be something propulsive about it. I'm always, I think that's my Achilles heel as a filmmaker, is I get very indulgent about pauses. I get very indulgent about those silent moments. And I love them in other films, and I've like really treasured them with actors. But we really had to constantly pick up the pace. And in the editing process, I think a couple of months in, we lost like half an hour in a week. So we were really, and losing, I remember that one of the things we did at some point was this idea like nothing can ever be repeated. And then one of Dee Dee's great notes was just let go of the guardrails, assume the audience is intelligent, don't explain anything that you think they might glean from a look or a gesture, which is a very unusual note to get from a producer, I'll just say. There was just constant pressure to like, how can we make it more efficient, which was really helpful.
All right, thank you for this film. I'm actually an ordained Christian minister, and I thought it was very powerful and prophetic, but also very tender. And I noticed particularly in a movie that assumes, relies on, is preceded by violence of touch, that there were a lot of moments of physical touch. I just wanted to ask you about that use of touch, almost as a healing of the violent touch.
Yeah, I mean, one of Miriam Taves, who wrote the novel, who grew up Mennonite, you know, one of the things she talked about a lot is that when men are gone, women laugh a lot, they touch each other a lot. Like, it's like all of that energy, the physical energy, the energy of laughter just charges back into the room. So that was like a very strong note to the actors early on, was any moment you can find for a warm touch with another actor or laughter with another actor is really important. And then I also, you know, a bit of a North Star throughout the film for me was that verse from Philippians of whatever is good, you know, whatever is just, whatever is excellent. And so knowing that it is a film, you know, where the background of it is this violent physical, you know, assaults, like how can we look at the way people, you know, touch each other and connect with each other physically that is deeply good and healing.
We all know that adapting a book is not to the screen is not the easiest path. What was that North Star that you kept while you were adapting to your screenplay?
Sure. I mean, I can tell you some of the things that were most important to me. And I also just want to start by saying that, you know, at conferences and festivals and panels, when people talk about adaptation, they can make it seem really, really mysterious and difficult and equivalent to brain surgery. I do not believe it is. I think it is something that's very accessible to people who love movies and know how to write a sentence and care about learning. So I've been like kind of like stunned by the way people have been like equating it to aerodynamics or whatever other things I don't understand. It isn't like it's something that it shouldn't be made to seem inaccessible if it's something that you want to do. For me, what was most important in this film in terms of capturing it, like the book in terms of capturing into a film, was the idea of what community looks like, the idea of what true democracy might look like. You know, instead of casting a ballot every four years, what is a really difficult, challenging, rich, revelatory conversation look like with a bunch of people who disagree on fundamental issues?
I want to talk about my horses, Ruth and Cheryl. When Ruth and Cheryl are frightened by Duick's dogs on the mile road that leads to the church, their initial instinct is to bolt. These horses don't organize meetings to decide what they will do. They run.
But Greta, we are not animals.
We have been preyed upon like animals. Maybe we should respond like animals.
In my lifetime, I have seen horses confront angry dogs and try to stomp them to death. Animals don't always flee.
Is this how we want to teach our daughters to defend themselves? By fleeing?
Not fleeing, but leaving. I was just talking about
I would
about
rather
leaving.
Stand my ground and shoot each man in the heart and bury him in a pit than flee.
Can we work towards progress with people with whom we don't agree on every single issue with? Which I think is those kinds of conversations are getting lost. You know, like how can we build consensus when it seems impossible, and is it worth a try? And that all just seemed so exciting to me. And the idea of conversation, which people shift their perspective and get convinced by each other and move and are given what they need to move forward, that was thrilling. The idea of what do we want to build as opposed to what we want to destroy, like these were things that were thrilling to me in the current world we live in, where I think there's every reason to become despondent. There seem to be so many reasons for hope in terms of tackling this subject matter, which really brought me alive.
One of the things that many things that I liked about this movie was kind of how it portrays this Mennonite community, which is something that I think in films tends to be treated as kind of a thing that's like frozen in amber and often, you know, almost idealized on those grounds. Like I remember David Cronenberg said he turned down Witness because he thought it was too uncritical about this kind of closed community. And I'm also curious about how you approach that. I know the author of the book was Mennonite, but was there kind of more in the way of learning about these communities from members or former members of them, and how you kind of went about, you know, trying to portray this as a sort of more dynamic community where these conversations are going on, you know, kind of maybe in the background, maybe not as shown in the film, but certainly I have to think that they do happen, and it was nice to see it shown that way.
I have Mennonite friends. I've had a lot of interactions with Mennonite communities in Ontario where I live. I've always been really fascinated by those communities and have had a lot of experience of the best parts of those communities in terms of the sense of collectivity and community and selflessness. And there's also obviously problems that come out of being isolated and homogenous, and it comes with a slew of issues. And this is obviously based on, or was, you know, the basis of the book, or the background of the book was based on a really horrific set of assaults that happened over years in a Bolivian Mennonite colony. But I think it was really important to us to make sure, because we were telling such a horrific story, that we did approach the women's faith on their own terms and also show the best parts of that community in that room as well. But it's a tricky balance and an ethical dilemma, because this is a community who, by its very nature, cannot speak back or fight back. They're not going to go to a newspaper. They're not going to write an op-ed. Like, I think we had to be very careful in terms of how we approached it. And also, don't say the word Mennonite, because ultimately we viewed this as a fable that's about all of us, and didn't want to give people permission to distance themselves by saying, oh, this is happening to this obscure, isolated community over here. Yes, it did. There are also echoes of what happens in this film in our communities and in our society. Thank you.
So as a social worker and a sexual abuse survivor, I really, really appreciate this movie. But my question is about your direction of August's character, because when he's talking to the young girl with the pail, I had a moment of, oh my God, he's grooming her. But that turned out to not be the case, thank goodness. And you sort of showed that in the young girl's character and how she sort of knew to stand her ground with him. That's the way it felt to me anyway. So could you talk a little bit about directing that scene?
Yeah, it's really interesting you bring that up. I've never been asked about that scene. And it was a really hard scene to direct, because no matter how gentle Ben is, and no matter how obviously kind he is and brilliantly he was playing the part, every time I had him stand up and walk towards her, I got nervous. Every single time. And we tried it a million different ways and from a million different angles, and I actually couldn't shake it. And there was such a tragedy in that to me, that no matter how good this man was, he was making us all nervous because of the context of this community. And that, like, there was something so painful in that, that it was undirectable in terms of getting rid of that sense of, is there danger here? And that's something that sadly, I think so many of us live with, you know, based on our own experiences in the society we live in, is this sense of being prey in some way, and that we've grown up with this. And like, how do we shake that? You know, even when we fix things, even when we have someone like Otis, how do we shake that feeling is, you know, a really good question.
You've been listening to On Story from Austin Film Festival. Do you have a screenplay of your own? Are you feeling inspired? Find out more about our upcoming deadline dates and submission guidelines for our film and screenplay competitions at austinfilmfestival.com. On Story is brought to you in part by the Alice Kleberg Reynolds Foundation, a Texas family providing innovative funding since 1979, and by Bogle Family Vineyards, sixth-generation farmers and third-generation winemakers based in Clarksburg, California, makers of sustainably grown wines that are a reflection of their family values since 1968. On Story is presented in part by Two Far Media, provocative stories for the eyes, ears, and imagination by Rich Chaparro, download the Too Far Media app. This project is supported in part by the Texas Commission on the Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov. The show is produced by myself, Barbara Morgan, editing help from Travis Neely and Travis Kennedy Sound. Music is by Brian Ramos. Production assistance comes from the Sound Lab, Travis Kennedy Sound, and KUT 90.5 in Austin. Go to austinfilmfestival.com to find out more about Austin Film Festival and Conference each October. Until next time, I'm Barbara Morgan, and this has been Austin Film Festival's On Story.